Good afternoon. So I was curious how much I could pull off of Rick to quote, and I got at least 3 points, so thank you, Rick. Want to spend some time just discussing the topic of loneliness. I do think that if you aren't experiencing loneliness, you probably will someday soon. If you have been experiencing loneliness and you made it through, I'm glad. If you are there now, we pray for you. It's tough. It can be very tough. So some of us, we're in all three boats at the same time. We've been there, we are there, and there's more to come. So hopefully we can realize that this is a topic that will eventually in your life, if not all the time, be something that we can look into. So there's other words that go along with this. There's loneliness, there's lonesome, there's desolate, forlorn, alienation, all describing a type of disconnection. And that's the kind of the key word I want to remember through today's thoughts, is this is a disconnection. You're disconnected from something, and that causes this feeling. So there are more than three types. These are the three I want to talk about. So that's what we will talk about. We're going to focus on emotional, social, and existential loneliness. So emotionally, you're disconnected. Again, we're going to focus on disconnection. You are disconnected from a true and a deep friendship, either with a friend or a relationship, a spouse. You're disconnected from the full potential, a true depth, a good relationship. Socially, you're disconnected from that feeling of belonging. You are lacking to be part of a group in your mind. You're not part of a community. You don't have that shared purpose that many of us enjoy with this group. And then existentially, you're just disconnected from kind of yourself, from your purpose. What do you see as why are you here? It's between you and the meaning of your existence. And again, I want to acknowledge that we're not all going to struggle with these the same, but hopefully you pay attention through all of it and something sticks to you. So we'll start with emotional loneliness. The points I want to bring out here are: this is an experience of feeling alone on the inside, even when you are surrounded by people who care about you. So this is a good time to consider that. We are surrounded by a lot of people this weekend. Questions you might ask yourself: does anyone truly know me? You're looking for that deeper relationship. This is not your normal handshake once a week, say hi. This is a deep friendship. A problem with this one and a struggle is if you want to have this relationship, guess what? You got to contribute something. You got to open up. No one can get close to you if you don't share who you are. This is beyond a surface level friendship or relationship. Very, very much deep. We can have relationships in school, work, church groups. These are nice relationships, very beneficial in many ways. They're not a bad thing. But overcoming emotional loneliness is going to take some effort. We talked about it. You've got to contribute something for this to be an effective relationship. If you have nobody that you feel that you can connect with on this level, you're missing out. This is a great feeling to know that you can be yourself, share your opinions, and someone's actually there to listen. The old question of, does anyone truly know me? We probably all asked that at one time. I know the answer is no for a long part of my life. I just didn't share. Didn't feel like I needed to. Luckily got married, and after a while, it's like, all right, maybe I should let her know a few things about me. And got a few years going, and it's been great. A lot of benefits from someone that actually knows me and knows how nervous I am for certain things. So it's very good. But here's the test. In a group, or you run into anybody, if they ask you, how are you? If you have no one that you'll actually tell the truth to, you are emotionally disconnected. There's got to be someone in your life that you can talk to and share the truth. How are you? So hopefully you have that person. Some people, it's definitely more natural. Like I said, it took me years. Maybe that's why I married somebody that has no problem talking about their life, and it's a good common ground, and we get each other out of our comfort zone. So again, strongly suggest find that person if you don't have it. Put in your effort so that you don't suffer from that. I think if you've been to any formal education or read books, you've probably heard of this Maslow hierarchy of needs. Psychological theory that starts at the base, what's your core needs? Food, water, shelter. And it goes from there. So as human nature, we build on that. Once you got those satisfied, you're open to go up another rung. And the one I want to focus on is the third one up, social. Social loneliness is a subjective feeling of lacking a sense of belonging on a wider social network or community of peers. So we touched on the hierarchy of needs, and with this one, I classified this one in my own notes and put it up here. This is the one that scares me. There's a lot of things that can go wrong when you're going into trying to be part of a group. Concerns are is if you think you are different and there's no one around you, eventually you're going to find a group that satisfies your need of feeling the belonging. And a lot of times that group may not be the healthy choice. So there's very much a caution. The reminder I have is to Colossians 3:1-4, we have to set our minds on things above and then let the things of the world fall in place. So Colossians 3:1-4, I'd like to read that. If then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things that are above, not on the things that are on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. So you must seek correctly and wisely when you're trying to satisfy this feeling of being part of a group, social side of it. We've probably... If you've got any age on you, you've probably been shunned from a group of any kind, sports, social cliques, things of those natures. You can experience being shunned. And the way I want to look at that is there's a couple of approaches. How do you get to the point where that's okay? You don't have to be a part of every group that you think is cool or you should be a part of to get a social ranking or whatever. So one mindset is on the negative side, you may get into the point where you change who you are to fit into that group. If you have a mindset that they are where you need to be, you will naturally start changing who you are, and that is very dangerous because it's not the truth. It's not real. You think it is necessary that you change something to be acceptable. Don't do that. Second mindset is you try and get the group to change to be inclusive of you. Again, if it's not a natural fit, it's probably not worth your time going through all this effort. Find someone that you can be yourself. Bad company absolutely corrupts good manners, You can be corrupted by the habits, the friends. This can take your life down a very bad spiral. And that's, again, why I labeled this one in my notes and for this talk. This is the scary one. Existential, this is the separation. This is the disconnect from your meaning in life. Why am I here? Why should I fight for life? Why do I matter in a world of so many people? I'm so small. Why does my existence matter? You question life, death, self-purpose. They're very understandable questions, and I do believe that at our natural core, we want those answers. Luckily for us, we've found those answers through the scripture, through our understanding of who the Creator is and looking around, we see our purpose. We'll talk about Job a little bit more in a minute. First example that came to my mind of someone that questioned his existence. We'll read through Job 3, 1 through 4. Job had been silent after all of the major catastrophes in his life. He'd spent 7 days in silence once his friends showed up. This is right after. So after this, Job opened his mouth and he cursed the day of his birth. Let the day perish on which I was born, and the night that said a man is conceived. Let that day be darkness. May God above not seek it, nor light shine upon it. That's a man that's suffering. He does not understand why he's around. The phrase crisis a lot is associated with existential crisis. It's a very fitting word. What's the point? If I'm going to die one day, why do I need to do anything in my life now to make sure that day's okay? It's just a day. This is the mindset that can happen. You may see some that they're not necessarily down. You see the folks that just throw caution to the wind. They don't fear death. They don't fear anything, because to them it's just they're here for a little bit and they move on. So they lose that connection with the higher purpose. On the downside, someone going through this may be so disconnected that they believe nobody can understand their pain. You start to very much feel alone. You feel that nobody can understand your point of view. Nobody can understand who you are. Nobody understands me. We hear that a lot with folks going through this. First thing I want to remind you of, if you've ever had that thought, God made you. That's about it. So he understands you because he made you. Also, there's around 8 billion people on the earth, last time I Googled it. How many have you tried talking to find out if nobody understands you? Again, sometimes you have to open up. You have to do your part to get past this. It's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy. But you can put in an effort. We've read the quiet generation, the generations that came before us that were famous for not opening up. I think we're a little better nowadays, just based off my age group, my peers. I know I've heard a lot more men cry in the last 10 years than maybe the first 30 years of my life. I'm part of that. And I think that's okay. I've watched some good interviews and folks about opening up. It's not a bad thing. We need to be talking to each other. We have to have a connection. If you're disconnected, you're living in a dangerous spot. So someone going through this existential crisis or disconnection, there are signs of it. It's worth looking out for. They can have a lack of personal care. We talked about the folks that just throw caution to the wind. That can be a sign. Pay attention. They don't care about personal safety. They're living for the moment because they have no concept of a future. They see no point in the life. So question, you probably know the answer to. What are some age groups that struggle with loneliness? Easy answer. All of them. Okay? So let's talk about the children. This is a development time. Their life patterns and habits are developing. Teens. Everything is amplified. Easy way to sum that up. So you're learning how to navigate a world. You're preparing for an independence that's coming. Your decision-making processes are getting fine-tuned, and you're getting ready for that next stage in life. Because, as a young adult, your life is going to be a whirlwind of change. You have decisions coming. You have changes in school, changes in jobs, changes in relationships. Some of these decisions are going to be lifelong. So very important time frame. So this is when you define the you. Middle adults, famous for the midlife crisis. Reality is kind of set in for that age group. You've been in the workforce for a while. The routine's starting to catch up to you. You don't have as many friends as you used to. Maybe you had 20 or 30 friends in your younger years. Now you're down to 3 or 4 that you can hang out with. And again, it's not a bad thing, as long as those three or four are really good friends. The older adults, I call this the calm before the storm. There's some studies to back that up, that as you get to that retirement age, you don't suffer as much. Some of the thoughts are, is you actually have something to look forward to. You know, some folks at the retirement age have been doing the same routine for 50 years of waking up, going to work, coming home, waking up, going to work, 50 years of that. If you get through that, yeah, that's exciting. It's good. You're going to have that little spike. But as I said, this is the calm before the storm. Our elderly folks need prayed for in a very, very bad way. Possibly the hardest time of our life. Not been there, but from what I can tell, knowing folks that just spend days and weeks without somebody, I can't imagine. So they may be missing out on many types of connections, and they need prayed for. They need looked out for. Want to get into a little bit more on each of the three categories that I chose. I think we have great biblical examples of each of these, and just could go a long time talking about them. We're just going to couple highlights on them. We've got Job, his own friends, so-called friends. They accused him of being at fault. His own wife told him to just give up. Any man that has a support structure like that, it's not healthy. But the good news on Job is he changed his perspective near the end of the book, where we see God spoke to him. And he realized, I am not alone. Things aren't that bad. I've got God. And we have the same word to us, too. So reminder, read your word. You have God. Also pulled some notes from David. His own family, his relationship with Saul, could easily drive a man into a state of loneliness. His life and experience, thankfully, that he went through some of the things he did. So we have the book of Psalms. Many of the Psalms from David through his life, younger years, later years, we get it all in it. I'm very happy for that. So in his life, we see that he was threatened, the death of children, rebellion against him, calculated murder on his part, roller coaster of a life. To get through that, the point I want to make is David didn't change necessarily himself. He changed his perspective on life, on who God was. He opened his heart more. Psalm 13, 1 through 2, I failed to write that down, sorry, but it's Psalm 13, 1 through 2, we see him say, "How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Likely this is in his younger years, but we also see in his later years, most likely this is him speaking and writing in Psalm 71. You can feel the tone change. He says, "Your righteous, O God, reaches the high heavens. You have done great things, O God. Who is like you? You have made me see many troubles, and calamities will revive me again. From the depths of the earth, you will bring me up again. You will increase my greatness and comfort me again." A lot of confidence there on where he's going to get his support from. Something to think about. We'll talk about Solomon in a bit, but David could have used his power and his riches to try and satisfy his loneliness. But fortunately, he turned his heart to God. On the social side, I thought of the bleeding woman. She was isolated from society. She sought out her connection, her resolution. She went to Christ seeking that healing. Pay attention to that. And when she got there, she had immediate and complete restoration. Mark 5:25-29. There was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "If I touch even his garments, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up. She felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Also want to consider Mephibosheth. Remember, I asked you to remember about how the woman sought out Christ in Mephibosheth. We see his fall, if you will, from royalty to being kind of forgotten. But David sought him out, restored him, brought him to the table. And we can see from that example, too, that after the exile with David, he ended up seeking back. So that relationship had grown dramatically through the years because David sought him out. So what I want to consider with comparing these two is both sides can play into effect on satisfying this feeling of exile or whatnot. The woman sought Jesus. So if you are feeling alone and lonely, there's something you can do. For all of us, pay attention to the ones around you. Look for them so that you can restore them. We all have some part in this. So not everyone that's dealing with loneliness is able to see through the cloud at given times. So having other folks looking out for them is very beneficial. We've talked about family connections. You can have this feeling of not belonging with your own blood family. I make the joke a lot that my brothers have college degrees and they read books. I don't. And again, now that I'm older, wiser, got the gray hair to show for it, that's okay. I am not my brothers. So to Rick's point, if I compared myself to them, and I wrote this down, that is looking at a reflection in a pool of mud. Did I get that? So my brothers are a pool of mud. But the other points I got from Rick on this of comparing, don't do it. They distort reality. You are you. So thank you, Rick. Those were good. Also want to look at the existential version. We've got Elijah to consider. Jezebel had threatened his life. He had about 24 hours to escape, and he was going to be dead. So 1 Kings 19:10. Been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel had forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword, and I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. It's not a guy that's very confident. Just a few verses later, 1 Kings 19:14, he said, "I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword, and I, even I only, am left. They seek my life to take it away. The good news on that is he was given a support group. God looked out for him. Basically said, get to work. And when you do, you're going to see there's 7,000 other souls out there. I'm going to give you a helper, not just 7,000 people that you can see, but there's another guy I'm going to help you spend time with to show you that you are supported. And in that, giving Elisha to him. We said we'd talk about Solomon. Just read the whole book of Ecclesiastes if you want to see a guy suffering with the existential crisis. He had everything. I was talking with someone earlier, and the amount of wealth, I don't think we can fathom what this guy had at his disposal. And it didn't work. It didn't satisfy him. He calls everything meaningless, which I'm glad he came to that realization. But in Ecclesiastes 2 and 10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. In the next verse, Ecclesiastes 2 and 11, then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and a striving after the wind. There was nothing to be gained under the sun. There is happiness in this world. I think we're all going to experience it this weekend, being around each other, but it's not where our hearts should be. So, reminder, emotional, you're disconnected from a true friendship. Socially, you can be disconnected from belonging to a group. Existentially, you are disconnected from your understanding and your meaning of your existence. Don't know much about this feller other than he's an actor, but came across his quote and it really stuck with me. Being alone for a while is dangerous. Once you see how peaceful it is, you don't want to deal with people anymore. I think, no one told me specifically, but I think I was asked to talk about loneliness because the members here at Murray know I spend a lot of time by myself. So I work here in Kansas City 4 days a week, live in an apartment by myself, and some other jobs I've had. I spend 2, 3, 4 days on the road just driving a truck, and the only people I see are the attendant at Love's, and just a lot of alone time. So I think that's why I was asked to share some thoughts, but I could be wrong. But with that, there is a lot of time to think, a lot of time to plan, and a lot of time to reflect. So being alone can be good. I do want to separate loneliness from being alone. It's not the same, and it can be a deliberate choice. We'll get into Christ here in a little bit. He chose alone time. Let's talk about his reasons. Choosing to be alone can be beneficial versus the loneliness can be detrimental. Alone can give you restoration versus loneliness depletion. It can be a positive gain when you use your time wisely. Creating and using alone time can be beneficial, but when you get the warning sign of loneliness, run away and find a connection. There are warning signs. The good side of alone time is creativity. It renews mental clarity. Back to Rick. Rick talked about during this time of clarity, if you focus on others, you're not going to get it. Focus on yourself. Look at what you're doing. Spend that time. Look at yourself. Reflect. Have mental clarity. Look back in your reflection. And most importantly, spend time alone in prayer. Embrace alone time. Use it to build yourself up with the help of the Spirit, our comforter. So we said we'd look at Christ. How can you not? He sought isolation, but was he ever lonely? He was fully human. I think it's safe to say that he felt loneliness, but he did not act on it in a way ever that would lead him down a dark path. Christ spent his mornings, we have recordings of that, praying and fasting. He had intentionally chose to be alone for these times. Mark 1:35, rising very early in the morning while it was still dark, he departed and went out to a desolate place, and there he prayed. We can see Christ using alone time to prepare for life's events. Matthew 26:36-40. Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." And taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch with me." Going a little further, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "So could you not watch with me 1 hour?" Christ wanted his friends nearby. He wanted help getting through life's events. Christ also used alone time for guiding with big decisions coming up. Great example here. So Luke 6:12-13, "In these days he went out to the mountain to pray, and all night he continued in prayer to God. When the day came, he called his disciples and chose from them the 12, whom he named apostles." So one full night of isolation and prayer before choosing the 12. My brother Brad gave a lesson recently, and it was one of the main points was how boredom can be good. We've lost the art of thinking. We're all good at reacting, but not many of us are able to sit back, take the time, be alone, and plan. This was a fun one for me to think about. At work, I'm on a maintenance team. We restore fiber optic lines that get damaged. And we're split into two teams. My counterpart, whose also name is Brandon, which makes it really fun for my bosses, his job is reactive. His job is to jump when there's a problem and handle it quickly. My department is the planned side. Our job is to take whatever problems he solves quickly and to make them permanent. So we plan our work out. Good comparison that it takes two different methods. Both have their place. We can see Christ handling grief in alone time. Matthew 14:1-13. "At that time, Herod the Tetrarch heard about the fame of Jesus, and he said to his servants, 'This is John the Baptist. He has been raised from the dead. That is why these miraculous powers are at work in him.' For Herod had seized John and bound him and put him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, because John had been saying to him, 'It is not lawful for you to have her.' And though he wanted to put him to death, he feared the people because they held him to be a prophet. But when Herod's birthday came, the daughter of Herodias danced before the company and pleased Herod, so that he promised with an oath to give her whatever she might ask. Prompted by her mother, she said, 'Give me the head of John the Baptist here on a platter.' And the king was sorry, but because of his oaths and his guest, he commanded it to be given. He sent and had John beheaded in the prison, and his head was brought on a platter and given to the girl, and she brought it to her mother. And his disciples came and took the body and buried it, and they went and told Jesus. Now when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a desolate place by himself. But when the crowd heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns." So he attempted to get alone, but his compassion for mankind kept him from that. But that was his intent to deal with grief, was to be alone. We can see that alone time can help you reset, get focused, get back on path. Continuing on after John the Baptist's death, we see the apostles return, Mark 6:30-32, the apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a desolate place, rest for a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away to the boat to a desolate place by themselves." So it can be good, after you've done some work, you settle down, take your time, eat, reset yourself, rejuvenate yourself. Praise to our Father for not leaving us. I want to read from John 8, 28 and 29 for that. Jesus said to them, "When you have lifted up the Son of Man, then you will know that I am he, and that I do nothing on my own authority, but speak just as the Father taught me. And he who sent me is with me. He has not left me alone, for I always do the things that are pleasing to him." I want to get into some warnings. Again, this is a feeling. When you feel lonely, that is a warning. Something is not right. Something is disconnected. You can handle the encounter poorly or properly. Our bodies give us warnings. Consider the growling of your stomach or a deep yawn. What is the message? You're hungry. You're tired. You can choose wisely. You can choose poorly. When I'm hungry, my first thought is White Castle and Cheetos. Love them. I am very happy for a short time. It is not a prolonged healthiness for me to choose that. There are other things that are better. So when this feeling, when you are experiencing this warning that you are lonely, are you choosing wisely? What truly makes you feel better? Or are you seeking out that quick fix? The heart is deceitful. We've had some lessons lately about the heart. It's only as good as what you put in. If you're not feeding your heart with healthy things, what comes out is what defiles you. And it can deceive you. Jeremiah 17, 5 through 10. "Thus says the Lord, cursed is the man who trusts in man and makes flesh his strength, whose heart turns away from the Lord. He is like a shrub in the desert and shall not see any good come. He shall dwell in the parched places of the wilderness and uninhabited salt land. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is the Lord. He is like a tree planted by water that sends out its roots by the stream and does not fear when heat comes, for its leaves remain green, and is not anxious in the year of drought, for it does not cease to bear fruit. The heart is deceitful above all things, desperately sick. Who can understand it? I, the Lord, search the heart, test the mind, to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruits of his deeds." Matthew 5 and 8. We see, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." We need our hearts to be pure. We need to direct our hearts so that they can direct us when we need them. Think back to David, Job, the bleeding woman. They controlled where their hearts were. They made very good decisions. Our minds are amazing, but they can also lead us down the wrong path. We often put wants in front of needs. Don't trust your heart unless you've built it up. Do not seek companionship outside of the church. Don't seek it. It's okay to have it, but be careful. This is a major warning. Those groups can match your hobbies and interests, often more than folks in the church. You might be into some obscure hobby that 10 people in the Lee Summit area are a part of. You're probably not going to find a connection here on something like that. But if you seek out those people, be very careful. Perhaps the most dangerous solution to counter your feelings of loneliness is this seeking companionship elsewhere. I can tell you from experience, in my early 20s, I had some of the best friends of my life. They were loyal, extremely dependable. I don't think they ever missed a call from me. Trustworthy. They were honest. I could ask them anything and get an honest opinion. They were the worst people for my life. So it's not enticing. It's easy to go that way because it was such a good, quote-unquote, friendship. But it was horrible. Many sins from that friendship. So with that, we as a brotherhood, as a church family, we have an obligation to watch out for those that are looking for friendships elsewhere. Keep an eye out. Be there for each other. Be a good friend. If you blatantly skip an opportunity to be inclusive of someone that you see that's not part of a group, if you skip that opportunity, you are betraying yourself. Use God's design to shift your loneliness. He's given us a family. Again, sometimes you're not able to see out. It's up to us to look in and find those people and give them what they want. Thank you to Joe, perks of having the song leader sit behind you. I asked him if he would lead this before, and I want to read just the chorus of it. So how can I be lonely? Verses are, how can I be lonely when I've Jesus only to be my companion and unfailing guide? Why should I be weary or my path seem dreary when he's walking by my side? God has provided us help. This is very good news. We have the Spirit. John 14:15-17. If you love me, you will keep my commandments, and I will ask the Father, and he will give you another helper to be with you forever. Even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive because it neither sees him nor knows him, you know him, for he dwells with you and will be in you. The name literally means helper, advocate, comforter, counselor. He is with us. He is living inside of you today. So again, if you think you are alone, you're doubting God and the Spirit. God called the Spirit to walk alongside you. We have the church, Ephesians 4:11. He gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the shepherds, and the teachers to equip the saints for the work of the ministry, for building up the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of fullness of Christ, so that we may no longer be children, tossed to and fro by the waves, carried out by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness and deceitful schemes. We have each other. Proverbs 27:17. I had to find a way to stick this in. Tiffany knows this is one of my favorite quotes that I've had in the last year. Proverbs 27:17. Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. The quote is from a Bible study that I was in a couple months ago. An older gentleman spoke up, and this verse came up, and he said, yes. He said, it only works if at least one of the pieces of iron is moving. And I was like, yep, that makes sense. If they're just sitting there, they rust. They fall apart. One or two pieces have to be moving for the benefit to come out of it. If you are not putting in any effort, you will not get anything out of it. More good news. Ecclesiastes 12:13. Wisest man ever figured it out for us so we don't have to. The end of the matter. All has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments. This is the whole duty of man. Matthew 22:34. When the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. And one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? He said to them, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. A second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophet. If you are putting God first, you're going to be better off. Ephesians 2:10. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand, that we should walk in them. As Elijah was told, get to work, do something, be the piece of iron that's moving, sharpening others, look out for those that are stuck in the cloud. Threw in a quote from my dear brother Eric Owens. He said, this life is hard. You can do it with God or without God. The flesh dictates what is a burden and what is not. So how you respond to the feeling can directly guide you on the path that you're going to go down, whether that's the good path or the path that is off course. Those of us that are in a good spot, you have to take advantage of that and look for those that need help. Let God fill the void. If you feel loneliness, you have His word, you have His work, you have His people, you have His Son, you have His Spirit, and you have God. This is the good news. Don't risk eternal loneliness by what you do here. You don't have to be lonely forever. You can choose Jesus. You can choose eternal companionship, eternal support, and eternal networking. If you need help, you don't have to ask right now, but the opportunity is there. We always invite people to come forward sometime this weekend. Find somebody that you can ask and you can answer, how are you? Answer it honestly until you find somebody that you can see it in their eyes cares. They're out there. Just keep looking. Come forward as we stand and sing.